Britannia, page 210, and this is in the middle of the chapter Daled 4 of Igeus HaKodesh, and we're on, we're just starting at the word Vehine. And what we've said so far, a very quick summary, otherwise we'll spend most of the sheer keeping on summarizing what we did on the previous occasion, but we're talking about the two different levels of the heart, which is the spiritual aspect within the Jew, and that you have the chitzonius halev and the pnimius halev, the external aspect of the heart, and then the inner aspect of the heart, which is an essence inside every Jew, which is that deep attachment and love which every single Jew has for God, which is inviolate, and even the most lapsed Jew will be able to express this nekudas pnimius halev, this inner aspect of the heart, except that it is most of the time concealed. And he compared these two levels to the orla, which is the foreskin, the uncircumcised part, where the bris milah takes away the orla, which is the foreskin, which is the undesirable covering, which stops the inner light of the Jew shining out. And we know that with milah there are two membranes which have to be cut away. So the second one is called priya, which means to peel back this thin, more subtle membrane, and that is the one that covers up the inner aspect, you know, the nekudas pnimius halev. And once those two have been those two coverings have been removed, then the inner aspect of the heart is able to shine forth, and the Jew is able to live a full Jewish life without the difficulties and the in Hebrew the menias and ikuvin, the things which prevent him living a true Jewish life. But still, nevertheless, in terms of a person's general daily avodah, his divine service, this inner aspect is very rarely revealed, even with all of that. So that's where we're up to the moment. Vehine, right bang in the middle of the page, the last word on the line. Al milas ha'orla mamish k'sivu maltem es orla slavavchem. Regarding this first level of the foreskin, which is a thicker...
This am I in the wrong spot?
Which is a thicker skin, that is cut away.
Here?
Yeah.
In the middle? I was looking at the wrong...
Regarding the first level of circumcision, so it says about that...
Excuse me.
Don't forget that in the Torah there are two places, or a number of places, but there are two references to Mila in the Torah. The first is the physical milah, which is the physical circumcision, which we all know what that means. And then there's also, it says, Umaltem es orlas levavchem, you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart. So we see there's a kind of conceptual circumcision to do with the heart. Well, of course, we don't do any heart surgery on the actual heart. It's obviously something to do with avoda, which means divine service. So this is what he's bringing out over here. Regarding the removal of the foreskin, it says, you shall circumcise the foreskin of your heart. So it sounds like something that we can do, because it says, umaltem, you shall do it. So this is the first level. Atem be'atzrachem, you yourselves will be able to do this, to circumcise your heart, which means to curb your passions to a certain extent. That's the more external level of achievement. But to remove the inner, more subtle, more delicate membrane, which is done, of course, in the physical milah as well, that's the priya. Yeah? But in avodas Hashem terms, in the service of God terms, this is a deeper level of serving God, you know, a deeper level of achievement. That is something that's zeu dava hakosha l'adam. This is something that's very difficult for a person to achieve, because it's so much a deeper level. It is the pnimius halev, the inner aspect of the heart. And we know the further the more inner something is, the harder it is to reach. Then about that level it says in the Chumash, it's all in the Chumash, that as the Lord your God will circumcise the uncircumcised part of your heart. So what's going on over here? On the one hand it says you will circumcise your heart, and in another place it says that God will circumcise our heart. So why do we need these two things? That's the answer. That more external or superficial level of achievement is something we can do ourselves. But the deeper level of achievement, to really make sure that our inner aspect is truly attuned and one with God, that's something we need help from God himself for. And that is only fully achievable when Mashiach comes. Because until that time we have a Yetzirah, where that means the Orla is still there. There's still this spiritual foreskin around that's preventing us acting truly Jewish in the fullest extent.
Right.
So that is a help where we need help from God. And as it says, you to love the Lord your God with all your heart, but levavcha, as the rabbis point out, it does not say lipcha, which is with one base, but levavcha, which means implies your two hearts. So what are the two hearts? This is the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Tov, of course, it's easy to serve God with him, but what about the Yetzer Hara? To use the Yetzer Hara and transform him, that he should also be helping you serve God, that is a very difficult thing. Why does it say Leman Chayecha, for the sake of your life, after saying that?
For the sake of your life,
yeah. It says you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your... So, leman chayecha, for the sake of your life. What does it mean for the sake of your life? So he says, leman ki Hashem levadehu kol chayecha mamish. Because it's only God alone who is your true life force. So that means it's leman chayecha to bring out the truth of our existence, that only God is our life force. That means transforming everything about ourselves, including the Yetzer Hara part of ourselves.
I find this very difficult because we give up our lives for this.
Yeah. Chol Nashecha.
And the people, and as you said many times, brother.
Yeah, that is in extremis. That's when a Jew is challenged to give up his whole Judaism.
When it's all being revealed, and then you're going to...
Now the ability to give our lives for God, in this day and age, before Mashiach comes, does come from the inner aspect of the heart, but it's not something that we live with all the time. It's only in extremis.
A flash.
That's something else. That's Chokmah. I'm talking in extremis when we're challenged. When somebody challenges our very Judaism and we're willing to give up our lives. A war situation, or when the Goy comes and challenges a Jew, you know, go into the idol and kiss the idol. That is something that is going to challenge our very existence as a Jew. And that does touch our inner aspect.
But
we don't live like that constantly every day. That's only a one-off special occasion. However, when Mashiach comes, we'll be living on that level constantly. Because we will have finally achieved the uncovering of the inner aspect of our hearts through the final circumcision of the heart, which God will help us achieve when Mashiach comes. And then we'll all be living on that level. All the time.
But you know what I was thinking? I was thinking, here, the person has been challenged, and suddenly he realizes what's going on, and now he's going to...
It goes away again. Assuming he survives, then it all calms down again, and he starts living in the normal way. The Rebbe spoke about this in a mimer, where he talked about how we saw that Jews who lived in Russia under the communist regime were prepared to do the most amazing things to live their Judaism.
You explained it.
They were risking being sent to Siberia, risking their lives. You know, teaching kids in Cheder, literally at their risk of it. Many of them did get arrested. Many of them never came back. And they were living like this on a daily basis, constantly being aware that their next move, their next Jewish act, could cost them their life or their freedom.
Someone's going to give them away.
And they continued doing it.
Cool.
In other words, they were living constantly in a state of mesiras nefesh, of self-sacrifice. But Rebbe pointed out in this maimer a rather strange thing, which is that once they left Russia, they didn't live like that anymore. You would think, logically speaking, that having trained, so to speak, to live like that whilst they were in Russia, once they come out of Russia and settle in Israel, they'd live like that there as well.
The pressure was off.
The pressure's off. So the point, that's the point that Hasidus brings, that when we're, so to speak, challenged by our very Jewishness, our very Jewishness is challenged, then that brings out this inner power that every Jew has got. But once the situation has gone, that it dissipates and we go back to the normal level of living, of living on in a more superficial way. And we're not living on the level of Mesiras Nefesh all the time.
That's right.
And one of the reasons for that is because we've not yet transformed ourselves. It's sufficient to operate under those challenged circumstances. But the Jew has not yet managed to completely transform the evil or the Yitzhara, the Nefesh Bahamas, whatever it is, and get rid of its effects totally. So that when we're out of the pressured situation, the full force of the animal soul comes back in again and submerges this deep essence which is in every Jew again. And it's, you know, it's like the tide coming back in again. And that is the point.
That's why the Jews live under pressure all the time.
That is very true. Again, this is something in Hasidic teachings. I've spoken about it a number of times. It's compared, the Jewish people are compared to an olive. But when do you get the olive oil out? By crushing it. So God, in his wisdom, sometimes decides that he wants to put us through the mill and crush us in order to bring out that point of oil, which is, of course, this higher, deeper level within a Jew. But it only comes out under extreme circumstances. Once you take the pressure off, the oil doesn't come out anymore. So it does talk about that extensively, about the extreme situations that Jews have lived through throughout the ages that have brought out these very wonderful soul powers. But we can't live like that all the time until Mashiach comes. Shalachain ava zai hi me'umka deliba me'nekuda p'nimis mamash kanal. Therefore this love comes from the depths of the heart, it comes from the inner aspect. As we said before, lemaila, b'mchinas hadas, it's higher than das, as we said before, it comes from chokhmah, which is the highest level.
So, ma is what? And choch?
Is kayach. Is the word kayach backwards.
You told me.
Ches kof is kayach backwards.
Which means?
So it means kayach ma, a power.
Which we don't know what from. Right.
That's why Mashiach comes with Hesach Hadas, means like a kind of Hesach means like withdrawal or covering, concealment of one's knowledge. So it normally means when you're unaware. Hesach Hadas means you're unaware. But what he's saying is that our expression of this Nekudas Aleih, Nekudas Pnimius Aleih, is the highest level, which is Chokhmah.
Uh-huh.
It comes from that. Which is higher than Das, higher than, because you've got Chokhmah being a Das. So Das is the lowest of those three. So therefore, we're saying that Mashiach is on the level of Chokhmah, but not of Das, much higher than Das. And that, which is what it means, Hesach HaDas. When the Das is removed, and we get to a higher level of Chokhmah, that's when Mashiach is able to operate. This is the revelation of this inner point of
Mashiach. I got lost somewhere. Mashiach, you mean the Mashiach within us?
No, the real Mashiach.
He won't be able to come until we have gone through these levels.
No, it does say that Mashiach won't come until the Jewish people do teshuva. But you know, there's debate about what that level of teshuva is, whether it's the final level of teshuva that we're talking about here. But the consensus seems to be that the Jews will do tshuva to a certain level in order to achieve the Mashiach should come. But then Mashiach takes us to a higher level, which is this level that we're talking about now. So this level is not reached before Mashiach comes.
Oh, it's
the Mashiach,
it's
bringing out the essence of every single Jew to the fore, will enable us to live on this level that we're talking about now,
the potential,
the level of Mashiach Nefesh, of Nekudas Pnimi Saleh, of the essence of the Jew, right, all the time.
Right. Ot,
Yitzias Hashchinah HaKlolis Me'agolos V'Hashivya, this will mean that the Divine Presence will finally be able to go out of exile and captivity, La'ad, Ulyal Me'alamim, forever. So that means the Divine Presence reflects our soul situation. Just like our soul is in a kind of exile because it's imprisoned in the Nefesh of Adam, is the animal soul, which disables it from acting at its true level. So also God's Divine Presence in the world is also concealed and restricted by the goings-on in the world and the Kippur and the powers of evil in the world, which restrict the Godly Presence from manifesting itself at its true level. And both come together. When Mashiach comes, the Divine Presence is able to now express itself and be the norm by which the world behaves. And within the Jew, his soul will express itself and will be the norm by which a Jew lives. Both of them are happening together.
Right.
See, the way that we look at the world today is not behaving according to Hashem's will.
No.
And you take any issue, you know, legalizing aberrant behavior between couples.
That's right.
And all that. How can a government pass a law which is against the seven laws of the sons of Noah? The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noah. That's one of the laws. They're not allowed to do that.
Someone's getting a backhander.
That is also part of the concealment, isn't it? That is an issue as well. So how can a government pass a law which is totally contrary to God's will?
It's funny, isn't it?
Because, and the answer is, because the Divine Presence in the world is in a state of exile, meaning it's imprisoned in powers which conceal it, and it's unable to express itself, and that's the situation. You know, we have to live with that situation. When Mashiach comes, he will bring about a change in the whole atmosphere of the world, that the nations won't want to anymore bring in laws and enactments or behave even in ways that are contrary to the laws that apply to them. So they will cancel these laws that allow this aberrant kind of behavior, and so on. Because they will then be living according to God's will, like everyone else. So there's a kind of counterpart between the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence in the world at large, and the soul of the Jew, both of them suffering the godless situation of concealment and inability to express themselves fully, and Mashiach will sort of reveal the truth, pull back the covers, and enable it all to be expressed.
If I can ask you
in
something,
its true way.
Please, God. What I was going to ask you is, if the Torah doesn't answer it, it probably does, but I'd accept your opinion. We learn about Sodom and Gomorrah, and these places behaved like this country now, right? This part of the world. I don't know whether Sodom and Gomorrah had a law which said you can carry on like this, but we have.
Yeah, they also had such laws.
We're given people.
They also had a corrupt legal system.
We've been given permission by a bunch of gunners to pay, you can do whatever you like. The punishment in this country is actually awful. You do certain things, they say, you killed a little girl, you interfered with it, you done that. Oh, well, all right, slap you the back of the wrist and say, don't do it again. I'm enraged, but how does God see it? Will this country get swept away?
You have to see the good with the bad. There's a lot of good as well.
Is it not just this country?
I know it goes, it's going to all across the planet, but
yeah, and we've talked about this before. There's a lot of good in modern society which didn't exist in previous ages. The concept of looking after the poor, the sick, the aged,
yes,
is something which has developed over the centuries. And it makes a very sophisticated extent.
It makes for a balance.
Where society has got inbuilt within it enactments which are based on Torah principles of looking after the weak, the poor, the sick, the old, and so on.
Oh, so it sort of...
I mean, just look, the whole concept of social welfare, whereby willy-nilly, once upon a time you had a poorhouse, where the poor were thrown on a dung heap.
That's right.
And they had to beg.
Women.
Now people don't have to beg, because the state supports them. Well, that is a very positive change in society, where society recognizes that we, as a whole society, have responsibility for those that are unable to look after themselves. And that's a very, very positive messianic move. It's definitely a messianic move in that direction. So whereas before it depended on individuals, you know, giving out almshouses, so you had much injustice of, you know, I read just recently of how soldiers were treated who were in the First World War, and they were injured. And they came back and they had to beg in the streets.
Yeah.
The state, you know, society basically ignored them. They'd paid it, they'd given their all for society. Many had given their lives, and those that didn't give their lives gave their limbs.
Mm. Yeah.
And they were unable to work, so many of them were on the streets. That is an evil, because it means that someone, you know, where's the justice? You ask this man to fight for your country and protect your interests, and then ignore him when he comes home and needs help. So now society has learned from all of these events that this is not the way of behaving. And an old soldier does have a home to go to, and he does get a pension to live on, and he is treated with dignity and gratitude. Yeah, and that is a very positive move. It's a messianic thing that they ever talked about, how the nations now gather together for the benefit of other nations instead of warring. Right, they gather together to work out. I mean, what's going on in Africa? You know, the nations in Africa, you know, Sudan has got internal strife. So the United Nations gets together to get a force together to make peace in the Sudan, and then supply food and aid and all these things. That, the Rebbe explained, is a messianic idea, where nations are coming together not just for war. Although wars are still taking place, so we're not, because Mashiach hasn't come yet. But we still have a new dimension has come into the whole equation of nations taking responsibility for other nations.
They're doing it
for their good.
But it's done because there's something for the government.
It might be done.
Gold, oil.
No, there's nothing there.
That's why they went into Iraq. Because there's nothing there.
But there are other situations where there's no natural. Look at the Balkans, and in the wars there with Bosnia and so on.
But what they're doing
the United Nations went in there to make peace between warring
nations.
And there's no oil.
But the conservative element, the West, has got a foothold now in these countries.
So
and,
what?
And
you'll never get to a situation where there are no ulterior motives, because that says earlier in Tanya that the nations do not act in a totally altruistic way, with an objective way, without ulterior motives. But that still doesn't say that they're not doing good.
Good, yes.
It says the good that they do has got ulterior motives as well. But that whole concept that we should be bothered what is going on in another country in terms of the welfare of that country is a new messianic idea.
It's still
which didn't exist in previous times. You know, Britain went to India in the 1600s or 1700s not to help the Indians, but to extract all the raw materials, and didn't care two hoots what the natives were doing. But now that has changed, and we do care at least one hoot what the natives are doing, as well as having some personal interest in it as well. So there's definitely a messianic move in the last 100 years which have changed things. They ever spoke about this? And he talked about, in the United Nations might have a lot of criticisms leveled at it, but it is nevertheless a manifestation of Mashiach. And the Rebbe pointed out that the United Nations in New York have, above the United Nations, it's got a quote from Isaiah, which is the part of the messianic prophecy, which says they will beat their swords into plowshares, and no nation shall lift up sword unto nation. That's on top of the portico as you go into the United Nations. So the Rebbe spoke about that. He also alluded to the fact that it was that the United Nations began in New York in 1942, and the Rebbe talked about how Mashiach is in New York as well. He was talking about the previous Rebbe. But we know he could have also been talking about himself, because he also came to America at that time. Just after he arrived, the United Nations was built in New York. So it's definitely, there's a whole secret about that.
Oh, that's fascinating.
He didn't mention his own name.
No,
he
but
about how great it is in New York, and the significance of that. So we are living in messianic times, and slowly but surely things are moving in that direction.
Can I ask you something? Go away from this one moment and talk about the Rebbe and Mashiach.
Well, just let's finish up the chapter.
Okay.
And then, because we're recording over here as well. And I'm sorry, not to finish up the chapter, finish the Shiur, because we're running over time anyway. So let's just finish off over here. We were saying before, there's a counterpart between the Shekhinah generally and the souls of the Jew. So within the soul of the Jew, you've got that counterpart of the Divine Presence. So he's saying that within every Jew, there is this concept of going out of exile as well. But he now talks about how this can be done even momentarily. Not necessarily on a permanent level, but for a few moments, and that would be during prayer, or during the learning of Torah, although here he talks mainly about prayer. During prayer, we can actually be on a higher spiritual level, whereby just temporarily, our souls are able to express themselves without being in the captivity of the animal soul.
And by doing that, we do what?
We attach ourselves to God and reveal godliness. In other words,
we
can experience a messianic period by davening. And what is the messianic period? Being able to express your soul without anything preventing you, without anything concealing it. During prayer, that can happen. It has to be prepared for. Yeah. One has to learn something about it beforehand and get involved and concentrate. But it can be done.
You mean have that moment of it?
It's a moment.
You get lost for a moment.
It might be, you might call it getting lost or maybe getting found. But it means that the soul is able to express itself without, you know, the world impinging on it for at least a few moments.
Right.
And that is a kind of mini redemption that has taken place over a short period of time. And it's an expression of this inner aspect of the heart, as we've just been talking about. Okay, well, that's a good point to stop. We'll leave it there.
Sure.